How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
I'm Gina.
And I'm Mateo.
And this is This Week in Skating.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. As the hosts of This Week in Skating, Daphne, Mateo, and I are all committed to bringing awareness to mental health, especially in how it affects figure skaters and also fighting the stigma associated with mental health.
Morgan Matthews Pennington won the world junior title in 2005 with her ice dance partner, Maxine Zavozin. They were also two-time U.S. junior champions and won silver at the 2006 Four Continents Championships. When their partnership ended in 2007, Morgan teamed up with Canada's Leif Gislason, but U.S. figure skating denied her release. She began a partnership with her now husband, Elliot Pennington, but hip injuries led to her competitive retirement.
Now, through a blog, Morgan is talking about the sport she loves to hate, but mostly loves. We are very lucky to have Morgan with us today. Welcome to This Week in Skating.
Welcome, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
Thank you very much.
We're so glad to have you with us. I was actually in Kitchener when you and Max won the world junior title. It was such an amazing event, like the dance event. I look at who was competing on the roster, and we're talking about Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer, Anna Capolini, Luca Lanotte, Matteo Zani was also there. And I just think that was such a wonderful, amazing, incredible time in junior skating. And then watching everyone go on past that. I was so excited when I saw that you had started a blog, and after reading the first piece that you wrote, it brought back a lot of memories about how skating used to be, but also reminded me how, even though some things have changed, there are some things that are still the same, and there's still a lot of work to be done in the sport.
Yes, well, I kind of completely exited the sport for about a decade and paid very little attention to it at first because I had to do it that way, basically to find out who I was behind all of this figure skating facade. And a lot of it turns out to be exactly who I was and also some other things evolved. But why now? That's really hard question to answer, but I think it was a combination of three things. One is that I moved out sort of to the country, to the middle of nowhere, and I've spent a lot of time sort of walking back and forth in my yard, in the spacious woods behind, and watching my son, and I've just had a lot of time to think about things. And the other things would be watching the world championships, which I hadn't done a lot of watching skating. I had done some coaching when I first, to put myself through college. But even then I didn't really watch. I just kind of like taught the little girls and, tried to make sure everybody was having a nice time, but I didn't really engage with the sport. So I finally got back to kind of watching more, and I was also majorly inspired by reading Gracie Gold's memoir.
Yes, that I can agree with. I think Gina can also, and Mateo too. Reading that book was eye-opening. But not only eye-opening, but reaffirming of the way and things that we kind of suspected were happening. But it was kind of like this hush-hush, nobody talks about it. And Gracie's book shined a light on it in detail. And I think it was necessary. And we need more of that.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that she was so honest. And reading it, I mean, it was really hard for me. I was frequently in tears. I'm not a big crier, but that did it to me because it felt like some kind of old movie where there was the Grim Reaper was taking me by the hand and showing me the life that I left behind because our paths overlap so much. I was not as famous as Gracie. I didn't get to that point, but are the people, I mean, I grew up figure skating in Illinois as well. We both ended up in Aston. She talks about my old partner and some of my old friends in her book. And I just thought, I'm still here. And I have all these thoughts and I totally agree, but I have completely abandoned this sport because I thought, because of all the negative experiences that I had, I couldn't engage with it anymore. And she writes this love letter to figure skating in her book that just, it, I felt like it gave me permission to rejoin as exactly who I am with all my good feelings and bad feelings about skating. And somehow the bad feelings reinvigorated the good feelings. And then I watched Worlds, which made me further feel these ways. And so I ended up just, I got up one morning and just started writing. And I'm glad anybody has read it. And if it helps one person, then that's great. But really my point of view is that, and I'm not sure that this totally overlaps with Gracie. I don't know her. I'm not sure exactly what her feelings are about this, but like, I love skating. Like there is nothing in the world that will give me those goosebumps that I get when I watch a skating performance that will make me feel that kind of emotion that there's nothing else in the world that will do that to me. So how can we make skating the best it's ever been for 100 years to come? I feel like there's been so much dwelling on individual scandals over the past few decades, all the way back to Tonya Harding and before. And really there's so much good in the sport. And what I really love about the sport is all the things that happen sort of outside of the medal winning moments. And that's what really keeps people in the sport for a long, long time. You know, some people engage with it every 4 years and they watch the Olympics and they see somebody come out on the ice in a sparkly costume and do their spins and turns and flips and maybe some twerks if it's ice dance and think, why are people in some cases dying for this sport? And it's because of everything else that happens in the background and also because of everything else that we love the sport so much. So I don't really know what the solution is exactly, but I figured all I can do is follow in Gracie's footsteps and tell my story. And I know that there are so many people out there who have similar stories who also love the sport as well. And so many that have completely left the sport for the same reason and don't engage with it anymore for the same reason that I did. And I just thought, how can we get past this? Maybe at least I can mobilize some people who had similar experiences, especially people like at least I won some medals. But there are people who went through all the same traumas that I went through that have the same passion for the sport that I went through, and they can't even put those things on their resume and gain something from it. And their experience and what they went through and their feelings about it aren't any less important than mine. So I hope to inspire others who had a similar experience to me, medal winning or not, to talk more and to be more open and raw about their feelings for the sport, both good and bad.
Well, very much like Gracie, in reading her memoir inspired you to start your blog. I hope that more people will, you know, take inspiration from you and start talking about it. Because as Gracie mentioned in her book, there are things that we don't talk about. And I am a firm believer that in order for something to get better, you have to talk about it. You have to process it. You have to look and analyze it so that you can develop a solution. If we're not talking about it, isn't that kind of like pretending it's not there?
Honestly, I think that what I'm seeing with Gen Z and maybe coming up Gen Alpha, they're engaged with those kinds of discussions. So I think it'll actually bring more interest in the sport if we're more raw and honest. Instead of this idea that, like, we're all these pretty princes and princesses wrapped in these, you know, beautiful packages, and we just have to go out there and put on a perfect face. I mean, even listening to the interviews after competitions, there's so much interesting stuff that happens going into programs and in the middle of a program. You know, if I have to hear one more person say, oh, well, we think we did a good job today, we feel positive. And it's fake, to be honest. And I don't think that we're going to pull in audiences being that way. I mean, I remember I used to think about what I was going to eat for lunch in the middle of a performance so that I didn't get nervous, because I did so much work before then. But like, would anybody, I think that's a common experience. It's not just like a something that you can easily wrap up and package. Like, and so, you know, kind of getting off topic a little bit, but honesty is not just going to help the people in the sport. It's also going to help bring interest to the sport, because that's what this generation of young people wants to see, because I think they're a little more attuned to it. They're more sensitive, and I'm excited about how that's going to impact our future.
Yeah, that is pretty incredible. I think you're right. I think bringing these stories to light, because those generations are more interested in the real, not in the sugar-coated version of reality that has become kind of common in skating. Gracie even said when Gina and I had her on the podcast, the day of her book launch, she was running between different interviews, but she gave us about an hour to talk to us about her book. And one of the things she brings up is that journalists need to ask better questions. And so that's something that we have brought up and thought about ourselves when we're talking about the sport or interviewing people, is trying to come up with questions that are more meaningful and less about, well, what do you think of your skate today? Because if you can target something with the way you word a question, you might get a response that's a little bit different than what you normally get.
I completely agree with that. I remember, maybe it was 2004 or 2005, a bunch of the Team USA skaters were flown to the Chicago airport and given, we went into a conference room and we were given media training. I'm sure things like that's happened now. It's just the only one I experienced. And I recall that we were shown a bunch of samples of sort of what a good interview is in sports news media. And there was a lot of emphasis on like Muhammad Ali. They were kind of thinking, okay, but this is figure skating. It's a different sport, different people. And I was sort of inspired by that. And I remember I had an interview like at the end of the season, you know, some sort of probably one of my only like Terry Gannon interviews or something like that. And they asked me some questions and I was very intense. And I got a lot of pushback from that because they didn't, it's like, you know, they say there are some people in the sport who want to push it forward and they say like, let's be more provocative. And then there are other people who are like, no, let's keep it exactly as it's been. We're not comfortable with that. Like, wrap it up, zip it. So yeah, I think it's not just the fault of the media. It's also just that there's this huge divide in the sport between like sort of the old school and the new school.
Yeah. I think there are ways of pushing the sport forward without losing some of the things that we love about it from the past. But I think there are also some people that are really just stuck in the way that things have always been done. And that applies to some, you know, media outlets as well. It's easy to cover something if it's all positive. And while we love being positive about skating on this podcast, because there's a lot of negativity out there, we also try to focus on the good and the bad and telling the story and sharing the news versus, well, everything is wonderful and beautiful all the time, because that's not real. That's just continuing this narrative of, well, we've always done it this way, so let's keep it going. And Gina and I with this podcast, and now with Mateo on our team, we're trying to flip things a little bit. And I think I remember you and Max being very intense. And I think that the journalists of today might have enjoyed that, because they would have gotten a real answer from you instead of, well, we did our best. Well, that's like the answer I think that's really given to skaters. You know, just be honest, but be positive, and yeah.
Well, first of all, I really commend you for that. And I do listen to your podcast, and I very much appreciate it prior to today. So I've seen that, and I really appreciate it. In terms of our intensity, me and Max, we were scrappy. We didn't come from like a top training center. Max had started skating when he was 13, and he was trained by his parents. I come from a middle class family. I grew up with my parents teaching in the inner city in Chicago. We would train in South Florida on these training sessions where the ice hadn't been zambonied in, you know, 5 hours or something like that. We used to train our programs on public sessions, maneuvering around the cones with my coach following us around with the boombox. And I felt like we had to hide all of that, because, go ahead. Okay. And I think, and I sort of point to this in my blog, but there's a pressure, and whether it's anyone outright states it or if it's just kind of felt, there's a pressure to meet a certain standard and criteria. And if you don't fit that mold, once you get to the point where you're highly competitive, you feel so much pressure to fit that mold that you just stuff the real self down. And I've seen so many skaters do it, whether that's, you know, eating disorders like I talk about that come from this. I think a lot of people, there are so many people in the sport who have hidden their sexuality because they wanted to fit a certain mold. I mean, that's just story old as time. Let's stop doing that. It's come a long way, but let's be real here. People who are fighting with their bodies constantly. So like, I was so hard on myself, so hard on my body. I learned to completely ignore all symptoms of you know, injury or anything like that, because I just wanted to be this perfect, you know, specimen that the United States could back and that they could feel comfortable putting money behind and media influence behind. And I just, you know, at home, you know, my family life and my mental health was a complete mess. And no, the solutions that were presented to me in my training center were just band-aids at best. Typically just, it didn't matter if I was taking my skates off, throwing them somewhere in the dumpster, trying to leave the ice rink because something horrible had happened at home. It was just my coach would go and pick me up and give me my skates back and be like, get back on the ice. And skating is just, it's not, I don't want to say it's not worth that sort of thing, but like, you know, it should be a sport that people enjoy and that people get, you know, fulfillment from. And there will be hard moments, because the hard moments should look like what they look like on television, which is, you know, sweating through a program, but not just completely ignoring somebody for who they are. So I think that in order to address the mental health issues, the physical health issues that are taking people out of the sport, taking people out of this world, we need to let people be who they are.
I think, so I read the post that you're referring to, which is called Healing a Broken Sport, My Story. And it's very important, actually, it's very strong as well. And I think you very well summarized as much as you could what you went through by touching different layers that are impacting the life of a skater. And actually, there are quite a lot of layers. You touched on a few of them. So the coaching team, the intensity of the training that you have to undergo to get to where you get to, your family environment and how the family has to listen to what the coaches are telling them about you and the best thing for you as a skater. One thing that I was thinking about as well when I was reading it is, it sounds very mature, of course, not because you wrote it this year as a mature woman, but actually you are talking about the life of a girl at that stage. So we also need to think about the age factor. You're thrown on the ice from a young age because you're told that you're doing something that you like, or you're, you know, you're given the impression that you like, and then that's it. You're going down this direction. And what comes out of reading your entry in your blog, it's almost as if you don't have a choice at some point. You have to continue.
I completely agree, Matteo. I made a decision to train full time when I was 8 years old because my family said, do you want to train full time? Do you want to have more lessons with this coach you really like? I said, sure. And that sort of split second decision that I was made when I was 8 years old, basically to just do something I enjoyed, was used as like, you know, at every step of the way when we hit some sort of roadblock. Oh, but she made the decision. Oh, she made the decision. Oh, she made the decision. She's driving this. She's driving this. She's driving this. And I can think of many times where I wanted a week off, where I thought, you know, if I could just step back a little bit, or even just take things a little slower. I remember my parents started homeschooling me when I was in the fifth grade. And I wanted to go back to school at some point, partially because they were not really pushing me to do much of any schooling. And I wanted to like learn some things. So they let me go to middle school for like 6 months. And I loved it. I like got great grades. I made good friends. And then, but I wasn't like winning any competitions that year. And honestly, I don't know that I would have been winning any competitions that year anyways. I was in sort of a developmental stage. I was sort of like working on my jumps. I was probably doing just fine, but they kind of saw it as, and they, you know, they got together with my coaches you know, kind of looked at the drawing board and thought, okay, well, how can we double down? And so the school went out the window. And so I went back to, you know, chug, chug, chug. And all I saw is my parents had moved several times for me, for my skating. You know, they were paying all this money to their to the coaches. They had, you know, I had this closet full of beautiful costumes. And I just thought, you know, they kept telling me how lucky I was. And my skating, my coaches told me how about how much progress I was making and how talented I was. And I was like, well, I can't throw that away. That would make me totally ungrateful. So, you know, we throw, like you say, Mateo, a young person into the decision-making role so early. And I mean, honestly, it did make me better in my career later on. I was like, I've basically been running my own business since I was like 10 years old. Hard to explain, but that's kind of what the ice skater goes through. But we do have to remember the human underneath. It's just, they're just kids. Like, they need to have somebody looking out for them. And I look back and I see the few people who were there, and I just wish that I had, you know, I want to give them so many hugs because, and Maxime was one of them. He was one of the good people who cared for me and gave me advice that, that reached beyond just my identity as an ice skater.
8 years old. It just seemed like, you know, when you were, your parents asked you if you wanted to do this full time and you're making a decision at 8 years old, like that you're going to just kind of drop everything and skating is going to be your life. I have a goddaughter she just turned 9, but that's her around her age. And I can't imagine she's going to school and doing millions of things. She's not saying I want to be a gymnast for the rest of my life, or, you know, and she's not stopping being a kid, but I feel like at 8 you were kind of forced to stop being a kid, really, and we're growing up so fast.
Absolutely. And I'm a mom now. I have a almost 3-year-old son, and I've learned a lot about child development just in order to raise him and try to do my best job. And I've seen it stated in many places in books that I've read and things that if a child is crying, if they're acting up, sometimes it's scary. It seems like something's wrong, but it actually means that they're comfortable with you and they feel open and at home with you and able to actually express themselves. I never felt that way. So I was like, I didn't talk a lot. I followed orders. I was just the perfect, hardworking little ice skater. And I think that in a lot of young skaters like myself, that is mistaken for maturity.
Yeah, I can see where that would be the case. I, like Gina, my youngest niece is 7, and I can't imagine her telling her parents, okay, yes, I want to do this, because she's too easily distracted by all the different things she's trying. She's in gymnastics now, but it's not like, well, this is a gymnastics track to go to the Olympics. She's in gymnastics for fun. She's learning how to do a cartwheel and she's having a blast with it, but I can't imagine her. No, not Rach. She,
yeah. And that's, you know, my goddaughter's doing musical theater, gymnastics, and it's a time when you're exploring everything. And yeah, maybe there is that at 8 years old that, oh, maybe I do want to go to the Olympics someday, but to kind of give everything up. I know a lot of athletes do that, and it's just maybe in hearing you say it, maybe it's just kind of, you know, going off in my head that, wow, you know, a lot of the top athletes that we watch are that's their life at such a young age. It's eye-opening.
And as I mentioned in the blog that Mateo talked about, and that we've been referring to, I think it's kind of the perfect storm between very intense coaches, often who grew up training in the Soviet Union, came over to the United States, were trained to teach, to treat figure skating as a matter of national pride, and as if it is their only opportunity in life. They come over here, no matter how well-intended they are, they transfer those lessons that they learned themselves to the next generation. They try and select skaters who have the right, sort of in the same way that they did in the Soviet Union, for the right body types, and also for having parents who kind of just let go of the reins and let them make the decisions. The coaches, it's in their best, you know, they want to make champions. That's their goal. And so they're going to push the skaters sort of no matter what to put skating first. And then this often turns into a really good skater who starts to win medals because they're very good at training ice skaters. And if they get them to remove all distractions, a young person will get really good at that one good thing, because kids are sponges.
Kids are also very resilient, to be able to come back.
Absolutely.
Kids can bounce back from things so much easier, that I think, than we as adults. I mean, they deal with things. They adapt, I think, much easier, even though I feel like there's like this stigma, or looking at kids in the way that they react to things, people often seem to look at it and think, oh, if we have to change the schedule, that's going to cause a problem. But I think kids are better at it than we give them credit for.
And nevertheless, it's our job as adults to see when something is right and something is wrong, and whether or not they do have a problem with it, it's our job to, you know, make sure that they have order and you know, a well-rounded life. And so what I was sort of saying is that on top of, you know, once the skaters start winning medals, then they start, you know, getting attention from U.S. figure skating officials, or in other countries, the equivalent. And maybe they start getting funding. And suddenly there's all these things that they could lose if they step back for even an instant. And that pressure that mounts just, it breaks people. And I don't know what the solution is, except for, I think, parents and skaters, but especially parents, need to be educated in the signs of when a coach is going down a road that's going to be unhealthy for their, you know, son or daughter. I think that there need to be more, there need to be more resources in place, for sure. Mental health resources, doctors in place, within the federation that can step in as a neutral party to the extent that that's possible. And beyond that, I really don't know what the solution is to this. This is something that happens. I think that it's going to happen less in the future, because all the people who were, the Americans especially, who were trained by these Soviet coaches, I see them keeping what was good and tossing what was bad. And, you know, like coaching teams in ice dance, for instance, like Charlie White and Tanith Belbin, both trained by Soviet coaches, you know, went through all sorts of things, I'm sure. And now they're teaching skaters, you know, the skills they learned, but also giving them courses on nutrition and things like that, and trying to, you know, do the right thing here. And so I think that the coaches can, this next generation of coaches can really make a huge difference, because I think like it is a perfect storm, but I think that coaches have the most one-on-one time with skaters. They are the primary relationship.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
In a skater's life, a lot of the time, sometimes more than their own parents. I definitely talked to my coaches more than I talked to my parents, because they were with me sometimes 4 or 5 hours a day, where my parents were working. So it's so much on the coaches to, like I said, keep what was good from that and get rid of what was bad.
There are quite different layers, yeah, because even the federations that you mentioned, they're almost acts like a company in a way. So you perform, you bring medals to the federation, medals bring money and sponsors. So there's a massive system behind it. And as soon as they find that one gold mine of a skater, they might be, you know, very happy, but potentially might put a couple of things behind in terms of checking the mental health of the skater. But there are also other indicators, because, for instance, another thing that you mentioned is when you had a drastic loss of weight, which I suppose would have been quite visible by the way you described it. And I struggle to believe in this day and age that something like that would get unnoticed, because you can see physically and medically the person deteriorating. And I said in this day and age intentionally, because actually we have recent stories of that happening again. And it's incredible to still see something like that, despite of all the knowledge, the medical knowledge, the psychological knowledge that we have, all the research, all the examples that have been shared so far. It's still there. And it's quite heartbreaking to see that. It's good on one side, a lot more is done, but we still see a lot of that out there. And it's not nice.
Absolutely. And of all the issues that I've heard of, and some of my former skating, you know, competitors and friends have reached out to me more recently, and all of them mention eating disorders. Like, I don't know a single one who didn't come away with that one. And if we're pushing skaters, every single skater, female and male in a lot of cases, especially with the new, I think a lot of this got especially a lot worse with the switch over to the IJS system, because the technical requirements got increased to such a large extent. So before it was more of an aesthetic thing, and then it became actually like a, it felt like a necessity to be able to complete those requirements. I remember the sort of the catalyst for my major weight loss was, I remember one day we were looking at the IJS rule book. This was the second or third season when we had competed IJS. And we were looking at all the different things that we weren't going to be able to do lift wise and what we could do. And my coach said, for us to be able to do this, to do these lifts, you have to be so light that I could go and you would just blow away. And, you know, I was already sensitive. So that's what I did. I tried to be so thin that we could get those things done so that my partner wouldn't have to worry at all about lifting me. And It came from my coaches being stressed out about it, my partner being stressed out about it. We were all trying to figure out what to do. Again, I have a type of personality where if there's a problem, I try to change myself. And I think a lot of skaters have that kind of personality, especially ones that end up in the top ranks, because you just have to be really hard on yourself a lot of the time to, you know, get through all the years and years of work you have to do to gain those skills. But I also remember friends, like male single skaters, who in the past, I don't remember them really dieting particularly, like they were healthy, but, you know, I think of males, Michael Weiss and Elvis Stoiko, like being like these strong guys. And then suddenly I remember some of my male singles friends saying like, I can't eat. I'm starving because I can't get these jumps done unless I have like so little body fat, but also little, like I even have to minimize the amount of muscle that I have. And if the sport cannot be done without doing that to people, then the sport has to change.
I agree. One thing you may not know, because you had mentioned that you'd been away from the sport for a while and you've come back. We had an incident, I think, was it 2 years ago at Skate America that someone, there was a mm-hmm. fan who made a comment to Caitlin Hawaiik, and she actually had to come out on Instagram and respond to it. I mean, I believe they had just won the free dance. I mean, it was, they had won the free dance at Skate America. And over our national champions, you know, Madison, and now our world champions. And a fan made a comment to her about her weight, and it was terrible. Like, I don't want to know what possesses a fan to think that in any way that would, have a right to say that. Is that something that you ever dealt a lot with? I mean, did you hear it from fans? Or because it sounds like the pressure about weight didn't come from like lots of people telling you, well, you need to do this or you need to do that. And that's different than what we hear sometimes from other skaters in the sport.
I did not hear anything about my weight from fans because I was honestly always very thin, very, very thin. So it was a little crazy to be asked to be even thinner. But again, I understand the pressure that led to it. And I don't want anyone to come away with this and think that I'm angry at the particular coach that I had. This is a systemic issue. They were doing what they thought was right. She was no worse than anybody else. Not anybody, but many people were the same to their athletes. But I did definitely hear rumors about various ways that I looked that people didn't like. And I didn't know how to change those things, but my weight was something that I could change. I remember my mother would sometimes read Figure Skating Universe threads.
Which is still in existence.
Still around.
And again, these are kids.
Exactly.
It's one thing if you're talking about the Real Housewives of Miami. Those are grown women.
Exactly.
And these are just kids who are totally well-intentioned. And so when I heard things about my hair color, my nose, I couldn't change those things. I was going to go get plastic surgery. And again, I shouldn't have ever even been felt like I had the pressure to do those sorts of things, but my weight was something that I could change. So if I was going to change something, it would be my weight. I think it's totally unacceptable that a fan said that, but I have to say that it's been so ingrained in our heads. Part of the reason I haven't been able to watch skating until more recently is because I watch it and I am judgmental. In my head, I see myself saying, Oh, if that were me, I would do, I would be 5 pounds lighter. I would not have done my hair that way. I would have da da da. And then now I can take a step back and think, that's wrong. That's that is your ED talking. That is your conditioning talking. That is culture talking. I mean, this is in skating especially, but you know, it's in other sports. It's in, you know, the magazines that girls pick up, you know, when, and men, GQ, trying to look like that. It's absolutely everywhere. And so I'm not surprised that somebody decided that that was a reasonable kind of feedback, catty feedback, but nevertheless, it's so ingrained. And I'm glad that she said something, because that takes an immense amount of bravery. I didn't have the bravery to just say no. I didn't have that maturity to say, no, this is what's best for me. I wish that instead of being flown to Chicago to get media training, I would have been flown to Chicago to receive training on how to stand up for myself. But I didn't know how. And the fact that Caitlin was able to use the social media her social media platform, which really didn't even exist back in my day. Like, there was no way for me to respond to anything except for just to, you know, talk to my friends about it. That's progress right there. And I'm so proud of her for just standing up to it. But it's obviously horrible that she had to go through that.
I think that's one of the good things about social media, isn't it? So they can be quite cruel. And of course, you know, we can see a lot of the negative comments that we talked about, but it's also quite a positive thing to have, because people like Caitlin, like yourself, and we had quite a lot of skaters out there that decided to say some things just to share, you know, it's good to feel like that, or it's not good to feel like that. We mentioned at the World Championships, for instance, everyone was thinking about Luna Hendricks going to medal. She ended up being in fourth place, but she wanted to share that she was still happy with what she achieved. And it's a small message, but it made a big difference, I'm pretty sure, for a lot of people to hear something like that. And with more important things like Caitlin, you know, of course, we don't want to listen to have to read this kind of messages or listen to this kind of posts, because the ideal world is everything works well. But sadly, we are not in an ideal place where things are so good. The thing is, getting ready for this interview, I was doing a bit of reading about particularly eating disorders in sports. So I don't want to be quoted with figures, because unfortunately I didn't have enough time to actually validate all the data. But what I saw across different sources is quite shocking, because it's almost as if 1 in 4 girls or women have eating disorders when it comes to figure skating or other sports. When it comes to men, it's 1 in 5. Now, I don't have a precise figure, so I don't want to be quoted on that, but I saw different sources that were agreeing on these kind of percentages. And it's huge, thinking about it. It's really huge. And it's, of course, all to do with the, you know, the as you said, it's a bit of the physical requirement to deliver what you have to deliver. But also when it comes to figure skating, there are also requirements in terms of how you present yourself, how you show yourself. And it's something that we know is part of the sport, but it should not become something that destroys a person in order for them to achieve something that they might then have, because we've also seen big names, you know, winning world titles, Olympic titles, and not being happy about it, which is shocking. You know, as a non-competitive person, I think, what? You're not happy. You're the Olympic champion. No, they're not happy. They put so much into it, and yet the result is not worth, or takes a while to process for them to enjoy it.
Or things have happened along the way that are not out and about for the public to know, but then become public because of the bravery of the athlete to step forward and actually tell their story. I'm thinking of Gabriella Papadakis and everything that she has shared about what she went through going into their Olympic season, their second Olympics. And you have to look at it and say at some point, is it worth it to put yourself through this? And then two, it can be worth it if we make changes so that these types of things are not the norm or encouraged.
I think that if we have to go through those things, that it's not worth
it. Right.
And when you really look at it, it doesn't have to be that way. Like, some skaters have taken more of the like low and slow approach, and then they end up on top. And I'm hesitant to say that the goal should be to be on top. I honestly think that the goal should be, and I'm not trying to say this in a cringy way, that the goal should be to be your best at your best skating. But if the goal becomes medals over skating, then I think that you've got the wrong goal. I mean, most people, probably just about everyone who ends up with a gold medal at the Olympics, at Worlds, unless they are independently wealthy, they have to get a job someday. None of these things are going to carry them through the rest of their lives. So they need to be thinking about their future, and somebody needs to be advocating for that. I remember when I mentioned that I had a judge said something, like we had a monitoring session, and this judge sat my coach down and said, she is not okay. She is not healthy. She looked great before. She was reasonably healthy seeming. What pushed her to get to this point, and please stop it? And she talked to me as well. And she said, I want to receive a Christmas card of you and your family when you're grown up, like past all of this. And I thought, I don't think I've ever thought about what would happen afterwards, ever. I couldn't let myself. But actually, I could have. Maybe if I had taken, not gotten to this point, had taken it a bit slower, had not ignored signs of injury when they came along, and actually taken care of myself when I needed to, it doesn't mean that it would have been the end of my career. Like, I was a driven person. I had the right skills. I had the right body type. I had the right people involved for the most part. It would have been okay to deal with those things. But like, that's just not encouraged at all. And it just has to be. Skaters are skating longer now. We see this. Deanna Stellato, but also Evan Bates.
Yes.
And Paul Poirier, and like lots of people. And Mariah Bell, am I saying the right name? The single skaters. Sorry, I watch a lot of Mariah Fenton's singles. I know she was a bit older, and she was a beautiful skater, and you know, won a U.S. championships, and so, you know, this sort of way of pushing young skaters to, you know, make so many sacrifices and ignore their own feelings and not stand up for themselves and just, be these little perfect little dolls doesn't actually even benefit their career, like as a skater. And it makes it so that, you know, no matter how successful they are in the future, they have to spend years and years healing before they can move on with their lives. And most importantly to me, they then a lot of times completely exit the sport. And so like the people who should be, you know, the next generation of fans just don't even want anything to do with it.
There were two things that you said. One made me, reminded me of something that was said to me. When you said that a skater should be striving to be the best skater that they can be, that reminded me of a Nationals, I think it was around 2011, 12-ish, when someone, another journalist, said to me, well, how could they be happy with that? It was a team that had not finished in the top three, but they had finished, like, a good result for them. And I, because I go to Lake Placid, because I follow more than just the top three in ice dance, I know what a good skate is for someone. I know what a good result is for someone. And it happened to be their last performance, like the last time they competed. And I said, but you don't understand. Everyone's in it for a different reason. Of course, everybody wants to win. But sometimes it's the little victories that you get if you place in the top 10 or you place in the top 5. That's just, you know, that it used to be if you got a JGP or you got a North American Challenge skate, like whatever. Those were the little victories. And sometimes that was, you know, the end of someone's career because they had achieved everything they felt that they could achieve and they were happy and ready to move on. There's so much more than let's be in the top three. Every team has a different goal. Also, thinking about athletes exiting the sport, there just aren't resources to help an athlete acclimate from the post-training life and transition to a job, like the working world. There's nothing in existence that I've been able to find that helps.
And there's been a lot of skaters who've talked about that too, have been vocal about that, no one helps them out after they're done competing, or they don't know what their identity is after they're done skating, and they've got to kind of figure it out themselves. You know, the skaters who balance school and skating, then, you know, okay, they'll go back and to finish school, and then they'll go towards that career. But the skaters who devote everything to skating and are not doing that, then as soon as skating is out of their life, what's next? And no one seems to help them.
Yeah. It's been difficult to watch because I've seen some athletes really struggle with it. It's like they're really part of the whole, you know, full picture, well-rounded athlete needs to be, you know, planning for the next steps, not the year before, but years before. And whether that means taking some college classes or just thinking about what outside of skating, if you want to be a coach and want to stay in the sport, what are the things? Because there are a lot more options now than just coaching. There are tons of options for skaters to still stay involved and be able to help the next generation.
I completely agree. I mean, when it's funny, my friend the other day was asking me about what the transition was like from not having a kid to having a kid. And I said, it was nothing like the transition from being a skater to no longer being a skater. You know, you go from not even just the what do I do for work aspect, also the going from training 6 or 8 hours a day to not, like, do you ramp down? Do you just stop moving entirely? And then that sort of, that causes all sorts of shifts in your body and your mind when you stop exercising that much. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, feel good sort of chemicals that a lot of exercise brings to your brain. And then if you suddenly stop, then that's not getting flooded in anymore. And maybe you have an injury or many injuries, like many skaters. And so for me, I was like, I don't even know how to exercise anymore because I'm so hurt. So what is that going to look like for me? I mean, thank goodness I had started yoga when I was 18. And I was like, okay, well, I can still just keep doing yoga. That seems to be okay. Though for a long time, it was like learning how to like do yoga because like, this is what makes my body feel good versus like, this is what looks good in the mirror when I do the yoga poses sort of thing. So, you know, it's like a long gradual shift. I mean, I'm so lucky that I met my husband. We were dating back then, Elliot. So he knew me back then. And then we kind of both transitioned out of the sport together. I had somebody to hold my hand through it. He had started transitioning out of the sport long before I had, because he had gone back to college when he was, or gone to college when he was 18. And so, you know, I had some guidance in the area, but, without that, I think I would have just ended up coaching, and coaching is great, but I don't really think it's for me. And so I would have hated to have just stuck with coaching simply because I didn't have any idea what else to do. And I think you make a really good point that there's a lot of other things you can do for the sport. The judges, many of them were never skaters.
Yeah.
They're wonderful volunteers, and I'm very glad that they exist, but like, why don't some skaters do that? They tend to go into, you know, being technical specialists. I did try actually trial judging for a little bit, and there was actually a lot of almost animosity towards me because I was an ice skater, because there was a fear like, oh, well, if these skaters start coming in and they know all this stuff about skating because they were skaters, then we might not get appointments anymore.
Again, it's a way that someone can stay in skating without coaching. I mean, because let's be honest, I love going to the rink and photographing a competition. It's one of my most favorite things to do in the world. But I couldn't do it every single day as my regular job. I like it. You know, events are great. Beyond that, I wouldn't want to do it every single day.
I think it also brings people into coaching for the wrong reasons, which does perpetuate some issues in the sport. So if you have come accustomed to being a little, basically mini celebrity, I mean, that's what it's like being when you're on the top. And as a young kid, you're traveling all over the world, you're getting these medals, like you're maybe on a commercial or something, and it feels awesome. And then you got to go to the rink and do the work, and you're working with kids who are, you know, a blank slate. Some of them are maybe one person in, you know, 40 people you work with is going to become a champion. And, but some of those skaters want to get back to that feeling of, you know, being in the kiss and cry and everything like that. And so they push all 40 of those kids to be champions. And that's just not right for all 40 of those kids. So if there are other, more of a transition for like, you know, how to be ambitious in the world outside of skating, but also keep your hand in it, then I think it would be better for the former skaters and also be better for the future of skating, because we're not going to end up with this situation with so many, basically a glut of coaches who are trying to create championship skaters instead of funneling them to the many, many excellent other parts of the sport that that are super rewarding and fun and great to put on a resume, like solo ice dance and theater on ice and, you know, Team Excel and synchronized skating, which, well, it's actually very competitive, but all of those other things that are great opportunities for people, but maybe aren't going to get a coach as much spotlight as, you know, bringing somebody to the world championship.
Well, before we wrap up, and I think given the conversation we've had here, I've got like a laundry list of other things we can talk about in the future. So I think we definitely have to have you come back. I wanted to ask, you were very honest and raw about going through your eating disorder. How did you know, or how did you turn the tide on that? What happened to get you on the track to getting healthy?
I dove all of my energy into going back to school, like immediately. Like I stopped skating and I had gone to one therapy appointment when I had an eating disorder before I quit skating. And the therapist said, I think you should start by getting your GED. And if you could do one thing, you should do that. You're going to feel more self-confident if you start addressing the education bit. And so that's what I did. I stopped skating. I taught myself, I mean, enough to go from basically having no education from fifth grade through high school. I taught myself to learn enough to pass the GED. I went to community college for 2 years, and then I got into Wellesley. I went there for the full, actually went 3 years, but, you know, got a full degree. And I just didn't focus on my body because there was no time and there was no energy left when I had to overcome so much in that new area. And so that was the main thing. I never actually got any official, and you know, I have to say it was a long time before I even admitted that I had had a problem. I think I just thought of it as like, I did what I had to do to succeed in that sport. And it took me knowing a lot of people who were never figure skaters to realize, oh, that was not okay. That was messed up and you know, not normal. And maybe that was traumatic for you. Before I had my son, I thought, I'm going to get therapy for a while before I have kids because I don't want to mess them up. And then I really, you know, got the idea that I had, you know, potentially had a problem, but I never got any sort of specific therapy for it. There was no exit interview from the skating world that would have funneled me in that direction. And so I think it's a shared experience for sure. So I was able to, you know, to have a normal life, to move on, to get healthy, but it was sort of just a combination of circumstances and just pushing myself in a new direction that did it. So I guess finding a new passion, you know, if another skater is, you know, stopping, try to just move in a new direction and start trying to tackle new challenges, because you'll find out really quickly that like your body size or anything like that is actually, you know, when it comes to having a regular job interview, that's hopefully should not matter. So, you know, it's not as front and center as it is in the skating world. So, I wish I had gotten help earlier on, but it did work out okay eventually.
Well, I should mention that we will share the link to Morgan's Substack blog so you can read that. And I want to announce that icedance.com has invited Morgan to join our team, and she has started working on a regular column called Behind the Performance. And by the time this episode is released, the first couple of posts will probably be up on it. And yeah, we're very excited to have her as part of our team. She's got so much expertise to be able to share. And Mateo is also a journalist at icedance.com. So yeah, we're really happy to have you as part of the team. And I'm really looking forward to reconnecting with you more because it's been quite a while. And something I mentioned in our pre-recording is Morgan and Max were one of the first teams that I worked with that were so very involved in the development of their official website. And it's just cool to be able to connect with you now and see how things have turned out so well for you, given everything that you went through. Gina, can you let folks know where they can find us?
Well, you can find us at our website. It's thisweekinskating.com, on social media, including the site formerly known as Twitter, X, at thiswkinskating, and Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. It's This Week in Skating. We love your feedback or your questions. You can reach out to us on social media or email us at thisweekinskating@gmail.com.
And if you're enjoying our episodes, please join us in our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. That brings us to the end of our episode. Thanks for listening. I'm Daphne.
I'm Gina.
And I'm Matteo.
And you've been listening to This Week in Skating.
Have an ice week!
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.